welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Yo, Paul. What's up, man?
Well, we're proud to have you back in the studio.
I know. We are here back in studio.
But stay on the other side of the studio there. Six feet apart.
Yeah, you're one of those. and it's been, you know, I think it's been close to 3 months that we've been in this kind of quarantine.
We had to open up the cobwebs. We had to clean them all out because you're there. We've been continuing doing your show, but we've all been doing it on Zoom or virtually or whatever. So first time back in the studio.
I'm the first one to do verbal spray into the microphone.
That's right. We have to spray it with Lysol when you're done here.
Just don't spray me with Lysol.
Okay.
But, you know, just for everybody, we are honoring social distancing, and we were in masks until we are on the podcast, but then we're facing opposite directions, so he can't breathe into me, and I can't breathe into him, and I promise we will do no kissing.
No kissing today.
So I believe we both feel as secure as possible in these times, and we shall see. Today, Paul, I really look forward to the show. Not so much because of fascinating content, as often as I get into content, but more because of our ultra-fascinating guest, my dear and brilliant friend, Jennifer Bork. Now, Jen comes to us with, check this out, with no sort of breathtaking resume. She's authored no books, no blog, no podcast, no business places that put her atop the so-called social status scale, which most Americans secretly strive. Instead, Jennifer is wife of John, mother of two amazing children, August, and is it Tess or Tessa, Jenna? Jen?
Tessa,
okay.
You know, she does have one credential, though, that you didn't call out here, that Trump's, oh, I don't hate to use the word Trump, sorry, let me cough here, but I never use that word, but Trump's everything. She's in Ann Arbor, Michigan. You don't know how big that is. That's where I went to college. She's an A squared, baby.
Said an A squared, Ann Arbor, Michigan. Well, I still know her as an Orange Countyan, and I have no idea when she said she had a power shortage and she may lose power that there or the weather there.
That's what happens.
I don't even know what that means.
It means if you're in Michigan and you don't like the weather, wait an hour because it will change dramatically.
That is true.
It can be snowing and then sunny. I mean, it could be thunderstorms and then hail. It could be anything.
Well, buddy, I'm glad it's you and not me. I like the predictable weather. Now, but Jennifer is also, now, you have to see her on Facebook for this to make any sense, but she is a Facebook makeup guru. She's a gym and boxing fanatic. But mostly, Jennifer is a woman with as much practical wisdom as anyone I have ever known. Jennifer and I worked very closely together in the late 90s and early 2000s. Is that right? Do I have my dates right, Jen?
I think that's about right. It seems like it wasn't that long ago, but that is a lifetime ago.
Yeah, it is. And Jennifer was the executive director of my company. But her real job was my creative muse. Apart from my wife, I don't think anyone gets me that really understands me like Jennifer. She understands my personal strengths, the one or two that I have, as well as my core pathologies that drive three quarters of what I do and think. So today, we're going to have somewhat of a rambling conversation of catching up, but then we are going to talk about some serious topics. But we really haven't chatted, except for once briefly, in nearly a decade. And so we will be brainstorming today the meaning of life, like we can do that in 30 minutes. But that's for everyday people like us not for your highfalutin thinkers. And we most likely will slip into a discussion of the impacts and learnings of the past months of quarantine and what it may look like in the future. So, Jen Bork, welcome to the next chapter with me. That was
a
welcome.
Charlie, I can't say thank you enough. I am so honored that my friend reached out across the country and across time and across his face mask to reach out to me. As your listeners probably already know from the time that they've spent listening to you and how they imagine that you are, this is how you are. This is not an act. Charlie is this smart. He is this fun. He is also, you might not know, Charlie is a little bit crazier in person. But I don't mean crazy in a way that is scary. I mean crazy in a way that, like, you cannot wait to just buckle in and go on a ride with him.
You know, Jennifer, we can just, you know, thank you for joining us on the podcast. That was all that needs to be said for the whole podcast. It was
hang on.
It was done. So let's do a little bit, because I think it will be interesting to our audience, because you do have an interesting sort of lifestyle, in that your husband, John, is a veteran of Somalia, Afghanistan. He was a helicopter pilot. He's a colonel in the Marines. And he's now a commercial pilot for Delta. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah, he's flying out of Detroit.
And he's an engineer. I wrote it, and I didn't know how to phrase this correctly, a home design furniture creative warped mind guy.
And a heck of a kisser.
And a heck of a kisser.
That never makes it on any of his resumes. But yes, that is on his list of talents.
Is that right? Well, that can't hurt. That, you know, that right. That can't hurt in a marriage. You know, not rarely, I have never heard a wife comment about her husband's kissing forte. So that, now, you know, unfortunately, I'm not going to check it out. I'm not going to get to see what this
you
is like.
Take my word for it.
I will take your word for it. Let me see if I had this in my notes. I don't. Tell me, you know what I want to know about, because I probably have it somewhere, but I want to start with this. Your makeup guru thing is so fun, Jennifer. I mean, I actually watched them for 10 or 15 minutes for you to convert yourself from, and it is so fun. You know, you're just flat gorgeous, and you're gorgeous with no makeup, and then you put makeup on, and, you know, you're a model. I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing what you do with this. Does that little business do well for you?
You know, it does. It's one of those things that I just have, like, this weird little niche where I can put into words how all these mysterious smoke and mirror things actually work. It's very difficult when you walk into a big, giant beauty store to try and understand how it all works. Everybody just needs someone to sit you down and show you how it all works. And so I decided, instead of that, why don't I just go on Facebook, where there are tons of people, you know, my social media sites, and just talk to people like I talk to my friends. And it's amazing. It's so much fun. People really like it.
You have a great following, man. I see all the comments that come from your following, and you have a really good following. And it sounds like you really do believe in your product.
Yeah, I don't talk about things that I don't like. So, yeah, I make sure that I only would tell you, anyone, to buy something that I would tell my friend that I see every day that would come back and say, I hate this. So I don't sell products that people wouldn't like. And I like to endorse people that make great stuff.
Yeah, that's very kind. That's just out of the goodness of your heart. You know, I've talked to my wife and said, I am so glad I am not a woman. I cannot believe, first of all, I cannot believe the time spent in the morning putting this shit on. And then you spend at least a quarter of that time taking it off at night.
Right. Well, we try not to call our products shit, typically.
Well, that's a man's point. No, I mean, a man likes that, likes the end product. But just listening to what has to go on, that all this stuff and this hair blower and this dryer and then this quiet and then this putting on this stuff, it's, oh, my goodness.
It's a science experiment every day.
Do you think now is this really a United States phenomenon? Is it a Western world phenomenon? I got a feeling it's probably more United States and Canada than anything else. What do you think?
Oh, I know. I mean, you look at the Asian countries and you look at Mexico and you start looking at Brazil and you start looking all over there. I don't want to say it's a woman thing, because there's also a lot of men that spend a lot of time getting themselves, that will go into like skin and hair care products and even colors and makeup. But it's just a people thing.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. I did not know it was worldwide, you know, but it does make sense, you know, well, largely because of the advertising in America. But then as soon as they see that, then it resonates with the core so much why it's important. But it is, it's a fun little thing. It's just, you know, we'll announce it at the end, but what is, I know you don't call it a URL. What do you call it on Facebook? A hashtag?
They're just our pages. I think it's just our page.
Oh, it's just a page. And so what do they look up to find you?
Just my name, just Jennifer Bork.
Oh, they do look up Jennifer, because I saw you change your name to Jen. So.
Oh, yeah. That's just because Jennifer is such a mouthful and I get sick of hearing it. So. It's so many syllables.
I'm so used to calling you Jennifer or Jay. Just so the listeners know, I may say Jay, because I called you Jay all my life.
That's okay.
But so they just look up Jennifer Bork,
your
page on Facebook, and then follow you, and just be prepared to have the most simple things. I mean, you do things that women spend, you know, half hour or more doing, and you do it. You say, hey, well, we can name this tune in 10 minutes. And
right, because I got sick of spending a half an hour on it. So
yeah, it's like whole face, it's eyes, it's eyelashes, eyebrows, lipstick. I mean, it's this whole routine in like 10 minutes. I almost want to do it just for the hell of it.
You know all the names. I'm impressed.
What names?
Like the names, you know, mascara and, you know, eyes and lips. And my husband just calls it the face crap, you know.
No, my husband's wife has passed the classes as an esthetician. Is that what you call them? And she focuses on eyelashes, which is completely there. You know, you can't do anything now with eyelashes, but that's where she wants to focus her attention on is eyelashes.
Smart move.
Is
smart
it?
Move. Oh, so much money in eyelashes, yes.
Okay, let's go into, that was fun. And
all right.
Let's go into, you know, as Timmons used to say, let's go down deep and stay down long.
All right.
So we'll talk about philosophy of life. Because really, I mean, Jennifer, you were so instrumental in the products that we produce. And we produced one product that I won't even say the name of, but it did sell $1 million worth of product, which is...
She did okay. Yeah.
You know, that's not a bad product. It sells... Now, it's not like either you or I got in anywhere near $1 million out of it. You know, we are trying to still, you know, scrape out a living to go to soup plantation. But,
well, we did get sushi. Come on. We got sushi.
Yeah, we got sushi. And I'm still a sushi fanatic. Are you?
Oh, it's hard to find here, but yeah, I will drive all the way to Detroit. Yep.
Not today, you won't.
No, not today. No. Not for a couple of months, but I'm going back.
Yeah. So, you brought up an idea when we were texting, you know, what we might do on the podcast. You brought up this idea that I'm interested in, and you said you wanted to chat about the meaning of life in relationship from the perspective of doing versus being, that we are not
right. We
are not what we do, we are what we be or something. So can you explain your distinctives to me?
I can, yeah. So I started, so once my kids were sent home from school and once I was home and everything was shut down, my kids were kind of stumbling around each other in the house and thinking, what am I supposed to do? And I had a lot of friends call and say, what do we do? I don't know what to do with my kids. I don't know what to do with my time. And I was realizing that in my whole life, if we could back up, if we could all try and remember what it was like before we had ever heard of COVID, the one thing we always would say is, well, when I get time, I'm gonna, when I get time, when I get time.
Right.
And we all felt free saying that, right, Charlie? Because we knew we'd never get it. So you can say whatever you want, like, you know, when I get time, I'm going to learn to speak Spanish. If I only had 2 months to do nothing else, I would learn Spanish. Well, okay, then you get your 2 months. You get your gift of your 2 months. And you, before you can actually sit down and learn Spanish, you have to learn how it is to be you. And I think that smacked all of us in the face real quick and real hard. Because we think what we are or what we be is actually all of the busyness and all of the tasks and all of the things we have to do every day. We think that's who we are, but it's not. You're who you are. You sit down for the first time, a lot of us, with who you are when there is no other option. And I know for me, that was startling. I wasn't as clever and as cute as I thought I was when I had nothing else going on. And it wasn't even, I don't know about you, Charlie. Do you find it, you are such a great introverted person. You probably enjoyed a lot of it, but it was a little scary at first for me to let go and just be me.
I say for me that as an introvert, I've been practicing for this quarantine my whole life.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, that was just, it was just a time to do what I've been wanting to do. And so I was able to fall right into it. So I didn't face that, but you know, what you're saying does make sense. And, you know, I think a lot of people would probably have trouble saying what they do is what they are, yet that is the truth. Because we are such doers, and we have, you know, like what I faced this morning. I faced this morning for this podcast. You know, I'd had time to do, you know, I had scheduled to do my morning ritual and relax and ponder. And I just got hit with the tyranny of the urgent this morning. I mean, I've got phone calls that I had to respond to. These were things that were, and it just reminded me, this is what life is going to go back to. You know, life is just going to go back to this bullshit, and not that this is who I am, that I take some kind of assume some kind of position that what I'm doing is who I am. I don't look at that philosophically, yet the reality of it is that is the truth.
Right.
That is the truth. The truth is what I am, well, always what you do reflects who you are. I mean, there is a reflection of you in that. But there, you know, we need time. You know, I think being calls for a sense of reflection. What do you think? A sense of reflection and pondering on what is important to me? What is important in life? And what kinds of choices do I choose to make?
Right. Right. And, you know, Charlie, you're so right, because you say, you know, for me and to take the time to ponder it. Well, a lot of the times we don't give ourselves time to think about what anything is for us. How does that look for me? Because we're thinking, how is this even just a wise use of my time? You know, I've got 14 things to do today. I don't have time to sit around and think how it feeds me. I just have to think about getting everyone else fed, I guess. You could look at it that way.
What is the alternative, Jay? I mean, what's these things come upon us and we feel obliged to follow this pattern, and yet it is a very American pattern. You know, I don't live in Europe, and I don't live in Mexico, and I don't live in Brazil. So I don't know, you know, I know bits about their culture having visited, and I understand some distinctions in culture, but I can only think as an American, and and this is a very American way of thinking, and it's capitalism. You know, I was talking to yesterday to a person, and I've said on the podcast several times that capitalism has evolved from an economic system to a lifestyle system. It's a system of consumerism, and it's a consistent system of acquisitions and gathering stuff, and it's not, it has no room for it. Maria Popova, I don't think I can do this quote well, but she said, consumerism stole from us our meaning in life and is now selling it back at the price of a product.
Oh, man. What?
Isn't that well put?
Exactly it. Yes, it's beautiful.
Yeah, she's a brilliant young woman. So do you think, it certainly seems like it's got to be more than reflection, that we have to make some choices to slow down and stop and say what truly is essential and what is not essential?
Yeah, you know, Charlie, what I've been doing already is as things start to open up and I've had so many invitations. People are desperate for friends and contact and lunches and dinners and drinks and so many things. Is I've had to pace myself and just say, no, not, oh, I'm sorry, I've got this instead. My schedule is full. I just say, no. And what a freeing little phrase that is. Where's she been all my life? So nice to be able to say when someone says, oh, we miss you so much and we just need to get together and we need to have some drinks. We need to get on the deck and we have baseball. Then after baseball, we want you to come over. And I say, oh, that sounds wonderful. But I just, no.
Yeah. You know what I heard, Jay? It was really helpful. I just listened to a podcast with Tim Ferriss and Elizabeth Gilbert, you know, Eat, Love, Pray, right. Or Eat, Pray, Love, whatever. I can't remember the...
Yeah, beautiful.
The order of them. And they were talking about saying no. And they brought up that one thing that I have learned, I bet a decade ago, I learned I don't have to give anybody, I don't owe anyone any reason for no.
Correct.
I don't, because all I'm doing is engaging them into an argument of why I'm wrong. Oh, well, it's just for this. It's just for a couple of hours. Oh, it's just this. And they also said, and I've never heard this. Here was the new thing for me. You don't say, I get it, but no. It's I get it and no.
Right, that power of and.
You know, and you say, I get it, it makes sense, and no, I can't be there. You know, the but no sort of gives them permission to...
Yeah, you're right.
...give their idea. This way, you're just taking away all ammunition from them. It's none of their damn business why I don't want to go. You know why I don't want to go? Because I really don't like being with you for that long of a time.
There's that. And that. Yeah.
And I don't like being with you. And no. So don't ask again. that is good. There's so many things I talk about so much on the podcast that I feel like I repeat myself. But I think we might have talked last time. I have a morning ritual that used to be 90 minutes and is now approaching 3 hours, where I meditate.
Oh my goodness.
I meditate in the morning. I start about somewhere between 6 and 7, and I meditate for about 30 minutes, and then I will do some sort of inspirational reading. And right now I'm reading the Mystics and Contemplative Prayer, so I'm reading St. Teresa of Avila and St. John of the Cross and Thomas Merton. And so they're rather profound readings. And then I journaled for an hour. Do you know how many words I journaled in May? I journaled 18,000 words.
Now I'm not surprised. Yeah.
And 18,000 words in 3 months, I've journaled 50,000 words. That's a short novel. That's 175 pages.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And so I am pondering things, so I'm really, mm-hmm. and I am making it that do not make an appointment. I will make no appointment before 10 or 11 in the morning. Just mm-hmm. will not happen, because I don't read newspapers before. I don't read anything, don't read any emails, mm-hmm. nothing. I want none of that on my mind as I'm going into meditation, and where I'm trying to dispel all thoughts. And so why don't I read the newspaper before I meditate? That's going to work, but
mm-hmm.
I'm hoping I can keep it up. I don't know. I have a couple advantages in that I don't have to work. Mm-hmm. I have, it's not like I don't work. I probably work 25 to 30 hours a week doing things, mm-hmm. but I mm-hmm. I don't have to. I'm mm-hmm. retired, and I can take those early mornings. I can tell people,
right,
it's my morning ritual. I don't even think about talking to me then.
Mm-hmm.
Don't even think about
mm-hmm.
calling. The phone's on mute. I'm not going to do it. So I'm not in your situation. I don't have an 18-year-old and a 14-year-old. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old.
Right.
That makes life quite a bit different. You have to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Right. Yeah.
To find quiet time. But sometime we do need to consider that. I think
right.
that's true. You know something else I want your opinion on. I'm watching a 1988 PBS special. It's on The Power of Myth, and many people will be mm-hmm. familiar with it. It's mm-hmm. Joseph Campbell and Bill Moyers. And
yeah.
it is so good, and I want to tell you, put your brain on when you're going to watch it, because mm-hmm. It is not for the lighthearted. And early in the series, the mythologist historian Joseph Campbell, he claims this, Jennifer, that people are not searching for the meaning of life. They are searching for feeling, and I put that in quotes, feeling fully alive. Not just mm-hmm. being fully alive is a trite statement. I don't know what the hell that means.
Right. No one does.
But feeling fully alive, I get what that means. That means
right.
absorbing, incorporating. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, having a teenager who has got one foot in being a kid and one foot in the adult world, I see that actualizing every day. And while I can't see it happening for myself, I know it is happening as well. We want to feel, I know, like for me, this time, this unique gift we've been given, and I'm going to be one of those corny, pain in butt people and tell you, this is a gift, this time. It's let me feel all the things, all of those things. I don't like feeling bad things. I don't like feeling unprepared. I don't like feeling like I showed up to the test and I haven't studied. And some days, there's not anything you can study for the test that the day will present for you. And feeling all of those things, I think, and navigating and working through all of these things, I think, Charlie, it feeds your soul. It gives you fire. It gives you experience, and failing and falling down and then getting back up gives you courage. And I think it's taken me this forced time to be able to allow myself to feel all these things and to see, holy crap, I have all of this in me already. This is already here. You know, I'm a fully developed person. I don't need time to figure myself out. I just need to get out of my way a little bit, maybe every day, like you're saying, in your morning, and just feel what I already have. It is not pretty some days, but it's so valuable.
Boy, Jennifer, you're really hitting something that I believe strongly. I believe less in discovery and more in recognition that in our souls, we are DNA'd to understand wisdom and joy of life and je de vie, or how you say that.
Well done.
We are DNA'd for that. We are DNA'd for God. We are DNA'd for wisdom, and it's already in there. I believe a creation that was already in there, but due to the crap of the world, it's been hidden. And so what we do is that we don't discover wisdom and new things. We recognize it. We recognize it for the truth that it already is. It is already inside of us. And that's why we go, oh, you know, it's not like, you know, great wisdom is like, oh, I never thought of that. It's like, I've always thought of that, but I've just never been able to put it into words.
That's exactly it. Yes. I think, Charlie, also, don't you think that, like, little kids, like, if you ever get a chance to sit down with little kids, they're profoundly wise in the way they see the world. And it's because of one little thing I've been toying with lately is they only answer the exact question that is asked. If they're asking a question, someone is asking them, the world is asking them, they only answer that one question. And I think that is like true wisdom, instead of we do so much prepping inside of our head of how we're going to answer every question and what it means and how it reflects on us and what the person wants to hear, instead of just answering the specific question with specific concise words. I think that's freeing. And I think that's a lot of wisdom in that.
I have never, ever thought of that. How many sort of preambles will I have to protect the position or answer the question that you want me to answer? Before I answer the question, I want to make sure that I'm understood, or that I'm not disregarded.
And let me clarify before I answer.
Let me clarify, because I know you're not going to understand. Rather than just put it out.
Let me prepare you for how genius I am.
It is, because you're really not bright enough to catch what I'm saying. Oh, that is so, that's so insightful. I'd written down in my notes a couple of things, and I think they're probably a bit too weighty, although I want to get into them just a little bit, because I think they show, my producer, you know, I'm kind of going to a, no, I'm going to do this, Paul, and then we're going to have a break after this. He wants to have a break, but I want to do this, because I want to change subjects. And that is a difference. You know, what is your basic philosophy of life? Is life a duty or a pleasure? And I think the answer is yes, it's both. I just read Viktor Frankl's. They just came out with the English translation of a Viktor translate. You know, he wrote Man's Search for Meaning. You know, that is, that's hugely successful. And he wrote it months after coming out of the concentration camp in Germany.
Yeah, I read that in college.
And then he's got a series that is just now, just like this year, published in English, that was written in 1946, and it's called Yes to Life.
Oh, okay.
And And Franco got me thinking about different aspects of life, and there are two philosophies that are ancient philosophies that are come from the 500 BC, I believe, and from Epicurus and from the Stoics, of which later writers, you know, Marcus Aurelius and Seneca wrote. And you know the Stoics take a look at life on accepting life on life's terms and dealing with it with sound rationale and acceptance. You just accept what it is, deal with it rationally, understand your core, live according to your core, according to who you are. That is sort of the essence of life. Epicurus, you know, really has been bastardized in our century because Epicurean thought is not about getting drunk and screwing. You know, that's really, you know, that's what it's taken now. That's the, mm-hmm. the definition. But Epicurus was quite simply about, a lot of people said that it was a pursuit of pleasure in life, but really what it is pursuing flourishing in life. And I'm I like Stoicism a lot. I mean, I there's a lot of my practical life that is from the Stoics, but I'd lean toward Epicurus. Don't you think that living, you know, that's like feeling fully alive, living a flourishing life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or flourishing in life.
Mm-hmm. I think that is, to me, that word flourishing, that sounds, it doesn't sound insurmountable or daunting. It sounds like a relief. Don't we all want that? Don't we all just want to be in our happy place doing the things that we love to do and that we love to share with other people and make them happy in some way? I think that's the whole point.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and that brings in the things we were talking about, the worry of the tyranny of the urgent. There are some things that are the tyranny of the urgent that are, you know, urgent and unimportant, but there are urgent and important things in Covey's, you know, in Covey's quadrants, who made up this tyranny of the urgent. I think he was the first one really to write about it. There are things that are urgent and important, and it's important to do those, but we get caught up so daily in the urgent and unimportant.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's those little tasky things that preoccupy, that eat up all your time, that are very sticky. They stick to each other and they snowball, and you end up going in the wrong direction. Not in the wrong direction, but going in a different direction from the things that do bring you that feeling of, ah, this is why I got up today. Get you away from that until you forget that you had a reason in the first place.
Yeah, and that you have a choice. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
That you have a choice.
Exactly.
You don't have to do this. You can, as you said, you can say no. And it could just be for the reason that you don't want to do it. Okay, let's take a quick break, and then we're going to come back on another subject.
Okay.
Oh, hi, this is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and I have one of my all-time dearest friends and most respected wise friends, Jennifer Bork, who worked with me for a decade and was my muse for writing, creating products, creating life philosophies, and she is doing it once again today. And we've been talking about the meaning of life, like, you know, no one ever talks about the meaning of life. But I think Jen had some really great insights. And we're going to make a subject change, and we're going to talk about quarantine and post-quarantine and what Jennifer so aptly named. Do you want to talk about the apocalyptic shit show? that we are living today. And I think there is so much to that, that we are facing right now in the United States probably the greatest unknown that we've ever faced. We have no idea. You know, the stock market is high today, and I'm talking to my wealth advisor wondering about completely getting out of the stock market, because I know stuff is going to happen. And and it has potentially longer lasting impacts. I'm wondering, if it all went away today, would it have any impact at all? What are your thoughts on the apocalyptic shit show?
The thing, first of all, I'm so glad that you kept my title. I love it. But my thoughts are as follows. I'm shocked that it took something of this magnitude in order for so many of us to realize that we all live in houses and not homes. And we've created houses of our own doing, our own making, our own design, instead of the homes that we maybe dreamed about having. Like when you're a child, you dream about the kind of home how you're going to grow up and live, and how it's going to be wonderful, and whatever fairy tale or story you've written for yourself. And then you look now around yourself and you haven't built that. And I'm grateful for the quarantine for showing me my shortcomings. I'm grateful for all of this, I'm grateful for that, yada, yada, all that crap said. I hope we don't go back to this chapter is over, moving on to the next, and just pick up exactly where we were. I hope that, for me, I'm trying to look at as the life I knew before died during the quarantine. Everything that I knew kind of died. And I don't mean joy and fun and all of that. I just mean the way that I was living life died. And now I'm this new person that's coming out, and I'm going to be a lot more careful with how I fill my time and how I fill my mind and my space and where I share my energy, because it is precious. And now, you know, I'm 50, so I'm looking at the life pre-quarantine was all of my youth. And now post-quarantine, what do I want to take that I learned from my youth into that? I'm ready to step into the shitstorm, which will continue in one way or another. But I want to be smarter about it. I want to take with me only the things that serve me, and not, you know, my albatross around my neck. I just want to cut that guy off and move forward a little bit lighter.
That makes perfect sense. Can you give me an idea of what that might look like?
Right. I think that you know me, I have spent a lot of my life, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate to this, is I have ideas of what I want for me, but I also want to make sure that everyone around me gets whatever they need from me, so that I can feel like I am important, I guess. Like, not important, but like that I'm needed, that I'm helping, and I have this, it's almost like a compulsion to want to make sure that everyone feels like they're getting from me something they can only get from me. And I realize what I'm giving is I'm not just giving them what they need. I'm giving away part of me. And I, you know, so that's one thing that I'm looking forward to maybe measuring out a little bit more different now, a little bit more judiciously, as opposed to just ladling it across everyone. I can pick, you know, how I spend all of that energy. Because you only get so much. Like I said, you know, I'm not 20 anymore. I don't have all day's worth of energy anymore.
No. Wait till you're 70.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm hoping I have more than I thought. I mean, man, I didn't think I'd have what I have now.
Yeah, I certainly didn't at 70. I don't feel 70.
Well, you've never seen, Charlie, I've known you a long time, and you've never seen the number that is attached to your name. And I think that is your... because of your soul. I think we all, barring any huge medical issues that may come up in your life, we're kind of as old as we decide we are.
Yeah, that's true. So, can you Can you name any things or define for me one thing you think you would do differently? I believe in the philosophy and the idea. I'm right in line with you. What might be something tangible you could recommend? Forget recommend. Something for you that you think would really benefit you.
Well, this is what I've done for number one, is I wake up in the morning, I check the weather outside on my phone because, you know, I don't want to sit all the way up and look out the window, apparently. I don't use my phone for anything else for hours. If you called me during the night, if you texted me during the night, if you sent me a message during the night, that is all going to stay in my phone. It's not going away, but I'm not going to look at it, answer it, or give it any response at all until I've dealt, like you're saying, with your morning ritual. I have my morning rituals, which is how I take care of myself. All of that comes first. And I'm real good at that sometimes. And then other times I feel like I need to check the phone and help people before. And, so that's one thing that I'm doing now, is like I don't look at it at all. And that's been very freeing. It feels really good. It feels almost like I've given myself a little present every day, that I have this time just for me.
That's do you know how just that by itself, how important it would be for people, but at the same time, we have no education in that. No one has taught us reflective thinking. I read a book. Have you heard of Alain de Botton's book, The School of Life, in his Schools of Life in Europe?
No, I'm writing it down.
This book is on emotions. He says we are emotional creatures and that we have the emotions of cavemen and Picts with the intellectual wherewithal of thermonuclear warfare.
Wow.
And and his whole school, he has like five schools in Europe, and they are classes. You know, now you don't get degrees or anything, but they're just classes, and it's all on emotions. It's all on emotions. I read this book on emotions. I thought I understood emotions. Mm. It was brilliant, Jennifer. And he is teaching us to think the way you're talking about. He's teaching us to think differently. He says, you know, we have millions of years or hundreds of thousands of years or however you want to do the calculation of evolution that has taken us so far emotionally and intellectually. You know, we really have, you know, you have the intellectuals of, you know, the Descartes and Pascals and, you know, whoever you want to say. But mostly it didn't happen until the Industrial Revolution and the Age of Enlightenment that we started using logic and analysis. And we started thinking that way. So this is a whole new thought in the evolution of human beings. This is a whole new process, and we're running our lives by this new process that we really don't understand when our souls understand the emotive and the, I don't want to call it irrational because I think it's rational, but it's just coming from a whole different perspective. It's coming from, you know, if you believe in hemispheric brain thought, it's coming from the right brain, not from the left brain.
Right, right.
Does that seem to resonate with you, that we don't know how to do this?
Well, right, because we have been taught the personal pursuit of whatever it is, if it's money, if it's career, if it's a spouse, if it's whatever you're actively pursuing, takes precedence over understanding why. You know, we don't even ask ourselves, why are we pursuing these things? And that's the only important question out there, is why do you need to pursue whatever it is?
Have you read the books on why, or did that just come from your gut?
No, that just came out. What is it now?
Oh, it's like the topic of the day. The why precedes the how and the what.
Oh, okay.
If you don't know your why, and I can't think of the author, but it's Know Your Why.
Know Your Why, okay.
Yeah, but...
I always write down when you talk to me, Charlie. I'm always writing.
But this is exactly what you're talking about, is that we must know the why. And Frankl talks about that in these letters, Yes to Life. The total title of the book is Yes to Life in Spite of Everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's really quite well written, and that the why is very important, and that we know our why, and our why gives us our yeses, our nos, gives us our strategies, our what we're going to do with life, who we're going to love, how we're going to love. Why is so important, and I think you nailed it in saying that, and that once again appeals to your wisdom, that you don't have to read people like I do. You just get it.
Well, I think it's just true. I think that's why. That's a universal, you know, overarching truth that we all understand on some level, whether we thought about it or not. I mean, that is all that matters. I think it's a good way to streamline your decision making. Once you know why everything in your life, then every opportunity, does it serve that why? If it does, then say yes. If it doesn't, say no.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, I talked last week to, did you remember Ty Rose? Do you remember him?
Why do I know that name?
He was the children's minister at South Coast.
Oh, I remember. Yes. Yes.
He was my good friend. And we were talking about making decisions based on intuition. Couple weeks ago, two or three weeks ago, that subject came up. Mm-hmm. I want to close with this question here, because I have a fear, and my gut says unless we experience a radical resurgence of the virus that somehow, you know, takes us away from, you know, going back to restaurants, because we can. Well, you know, there are a handful of restaurants that we can go into now. I don't know about mm-hmm. you, but we can mm-hmm. go into restaurants, and that with this, even though it was 3 months,
mm-hmm.
That's just a blip in time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I just have this fear that things are going to go back to the old ways in no time. And in doing so, we'll lose the incredible art and learnings of reflection and pondering the essential things of life, and before we know it, we're going to be consumed with the tyranny of the urgent and let it resume control. Do you have that fear?
I have that fear, and the reason why I do is because I've seen in some places where I have friends in states that have been open for a while that are already there. I've already seen it, and I'm grateful that I'm seeing that they're already right back where they started, because it is a reminder to me. It is yet another gift that we've been given that, look, people are already, your fears are coming true, but it's a choice.
What if we were to encourage our listeners and ourselves to write down now in... You know, as we're toward the end of the first phase of the virus, what our key learnings were, and how I plan to modify my lifestyle based on what I've learned, rather than falling prey to falling right back to consumerism and the bullshit and the politics and all of the...
Right, and maybe even writing a letter, like a gentle letter to yourself, about how hard you worked to learn some of those things and how hard it was. But you did the work and you learned it. Don't throw it away.
No, you know what you do? You know the secret to that is? Mail it to yourself.
I'm afraid, what?
Mail it to yourself.
Yes.
You get it in the mail. And then for some reason, you know, when you receive it in the mail, you'll read it again. And it will be pondered there, and you know, then we could get real anal and checklist and all that kind of stuff. But it just, we need to learn from this. I need to learn from this. I don't want to say what anybody else has to do, but I know what I need to do. And in my spiritual ponderings, and that's another, Jennifer, what I have learned in mysticism and contemplative prayer have totally changed the way I view God and my relationship with God. It is just like nothing we've ever talked about before. It is at it is such at a different level.
Can we go for another hour? I want to hear it all.
Okay, we'll talk about it, and it's very encouraging. Jennifer, we are unfortunately out of time, and you and I could go on for a little while longer, that's for sure. I just, you know, talking to you just always encourages me. I can see why you are my muse. When I get writer's block, I need to just call Jay.
Call me. I enjoy your ideas and your twists and turns. They thrill me. I love the way your weird little mind works, Charlie. You're an amazing person.
Oh, that is so kind of you, Jennifer. Thank you so much. And I want to thank you for being on the podcast with me and remind everyone that there is so much more to Jennifer than makeup. But just, I mean, really, I mean, makeup is just a fun little thing she does on the side because it's, I know you don't do it for the money. I know you do it for the fun, you know, and the money just.
It's fun. I'm addicted to fun. It's great.
Yeah, you've always been fun. And so please check out Jennifer Bork, her Facebook page, and follow her and get her little makeup things, even guys. Guys, it's fun to watch her, and it's fun to watch a beautiful woman start and become a model. You know, it's
the sausage being made.
Look at me! You've been great. So thank you, Jay.
I love
talking to you, and I also want to thank all of our audience for tuning in to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and be sure to check us out at our website, thenextchapter.life. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.